WLFE DB Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Metal Mayhem ROC. I'm your host, John the Vernomatic Verno, with my metal cohort, Forever Metal Mark. And today, we have a special guest, Jim Florentine, so kind to step in and talk metal with us today. Jim, how are you?
Look, man, it's always good to talk metal. There's not a lot of us left.
Yeah,
you know,
sadly.
We're like, you know, it's a little, you know, so whenever you always gravitate towards the metalheads when you find them, because then you could just talk shop with them.
Oh, yeah.
So,
first question I have for you is, what were your heavy metal influences early on? Like, what got you into metal?
My older brothers, they were like 5 years older than me when I was growing up. So I was maybe 10, 11, 12 at the time. They were 16, 17. They were into metal, so they were just bringing music home. I was driving around in a car with them in the back seat, and they were taking me to shows. So I got into, you know, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, Ted Nugent, Aerosmith,
yeah,
even Boston, you know, the Cars, stuff like that, the Doors, the Rolling Stones. So I had no choice but to listen to it, because I would just hang with my older brothers all the time, and I'd share a room with them. They'd just be cranking Ted, Double Live Gonzo, or, you know, Sabbath and stuff like that. So, and then they were taking me to shows when I was a kid. They convinced my parents, let them come. Let them go to the show. We'll watch them. No problem. I was smoking weed at 12 years old, going to concerts. It was great.
Well, we have an age difference. I'm 51. How old are you?
28.
Okay. Right, well, in a few years, yeah. I was the same way. My older brother's like 4 years older.
Right.
So there I am looking through his albums, picking up Farewell to Kings. I'm like, look at this fucking thing.
Yeah.
You put it on and you get into it. And so.
So that's how it happened. Yeah. And, you know, I saw AC/DC with Bon Scott when I was a little kid.
What was your first show?
Black Sabbath, Van Halen.
Oh, the 78.
Yeah, which Van Halen did not blow Sabbath off the stage. I was there. It's a myth. I asked Tony Iommi on that metal show if that was true, and he said no.
Where did you see it? Down in Jersey?
Who?
No, where did you see it? What venue?
Oh, Madison Square Garden. Oh,
okay.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so that was like a rumor? That was kind of...
That was always a rumor, because first of all, people don't realize, if you research, the Van Halen record came out in like March of 78. By the time they played the Garden in August... And even that whole tour,
yeah,
they were only playing You Really Got Me on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the cover version of the King song. So that was the, and they weren't blowing up. They weren't, you know, yeah, they were good, but most of the people had no idea who fucking Van Halen was.
Right, yeah.
Maybe
right.
By August, the second single was out, Running with the Devil, but it wasn't, they didn't blow up overnight.
Yeah.
It took a long time for that first record to really start hitting. And then they put Van Halen 2 right out after that, so they got the momentum. But they weren't, so maybe the people in the audience knew, maybe, I don't know, 3,000 people had that Van Halen record and knew it, and 17,000 knew one song.
Yeah.
So they weren't blowing on, like, oh my God, I don't know what this, I never heard any of this, but this is amazing.
Well, Van Halen's my favorite band.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, I
love Van Halen.
Yeah.
The old Van Halen.
Have you read the Noel Monk book?
Yeah,
the Van Halen Rising one?
I did both.
Fucking.
They're unbelievable.
On that Gary Reisner for Raznov, the guy that did the Van Halen Rising.
Yeah.
I did it on audio.
Yeah, I did both books on audio.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're great.
Well, you know, that's someone I would like to get on the show. But, yeah, so I could follow that whole Van Halen thing and that tour of how it was back in those days. I don't know if Mark realizes that. It was, they get off the road. It's 3 weeks. They record Van Halen 2, and they're back out there again. Yeah, so Van Halen and Sabbath, your first one. How old were you?
14.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking great.
I saw the Fair Warning tour when I was 14.
And yeah, it was amazing, man.
We have a segment called Mount Rushmore of metal, so we'll talk about bands, guitarists, singers, you know, whatever. So who's your Mount Rushmore of metal for you?
Bands. Top four.
Yeah, what? Just four.
Top four metal bands.
Four metal bands?
Yeah.
Black Sabbath, AC/DC, Motorhead, and... It's tough, man.
I could
throw Accept in there.
Top four all time.
Yeah,
Accept?
I could nice. Throw Accept in there. I could throw Rage Against the Machine in there. I love Rage Against the Machine. I could throw Slipknot in there. I'm a big Slipknot fan. So I don't know, man. The fourth one's tough.
There's no right answer.
We always have a hard time when we do the Mount Rushmore of anything, like four guitarists, four singers, four band. Like, you can't always just do four. So always, like, we do four, then we throw like a fifth or sixth.
we cheat. Priest, Maiden.
We talked about Maiden last
time. Yeah. They're in there, yeah, too. It's I don't know. I'm going to throw Accept in there for the fourth one.
All right, cool.
Udo Dirkschneider, it's my favorite.
New guy, the singer from
Jersey. No, I'm just original. Accept. I mean, Udo Dirkschneider, to me, has the best heavy metal voice of all time. Yeah. That's my favorite. Hard rock is Bon Scott. I like Bon Scott. I think has the best hard rock voice, and Udo has the best metal voice. To me, I love the fucking old Accept shit. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I just saw that video for I'm a Rebel. I never saw that.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And he has, Udo has long hair.
Yeah, he's got long hair.
I saw Udo.
Never saw that.
He came through, but he was doing, when he does that Dirkschneider stuff, it's all old Accept.
Yeah, he did all the came around, did all
old
Accept.
Udo, he does the Udo stuff, and I thought the Dirkschneider stuff was awesome because he's just doing all the old.
Well, he did all the old Accept that tour last spring.
Yep, yeah, he came around twice and did it. I saw it both times.
We saw that. That was good.
Well, actually, that's another discussion we always have is the old idea that as bands age out and they get older and they get replacement members, does that become a watered down version? Like people are saying now, like, oh, Judas Priest is almost more like a cover band now, although there's three guys that have been there for a long time. But then you say, like you mentioned Bon Scott, AC/DC. Well, nobody said anything that it wasn't AC/DC when Brian Johnson came in. Many would say he made the band. So I don't know. I think this idea that other performers can come in and make a band, right?
Well, Brian Johnson, Bond died, so you couldn't go,
right.
Well, oh man, Bond wanted more money and he left the band.
Yeah,
you know, and you're like, fuck, I want Bond back. So if he dies, someone dies in the band, like, okay, well, I got no choice. When Cliff Burton died too, you're like, well, they need a new bass player. So.
But when Blaze Bailey leaves and Dickinson comes in, then that's a different scenario, clearly.
Yeah.
That didn't count though, because that didn't last.
Listen, you gotta realize, like, these guys get together in their early 20s. They're fucking out of control. Mm-hmm. They're idiots. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But they click. Because they're all just hanging out. They're sleeping on the floor. They're getting 2 hours of sleep. They're writing great songs. And then cut to 20 years later, the same people you guys hung out with at 22, a lot of them you don't hang out when you're 42. Like, all right, this fucking guy's an asshole.
Yeah.
I can't hang out with him
anymore. Like Vern Mackin.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's some guys you think about. I wouldn't hang out with that guy. I see him once in a while. Hey, man, what's up? And then imagine being in a relationship with them 20 years later. So I could see why they wouldn't get along
No, good point.
Yeah, same as a wife or something. You marry at 22. At 42, I've changed.
I have a joke. I'm not a comedian, but I call them my KFC friends. You know, like KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Yeah.
You think of going there, maybe like 3 months, you get a craving, you have, and you're like, why the fuck did I go there? It sucks.
Yeah, right.
You have friends like that.
Yeah, an hour later, you're shitting on a ball from the KFC.
You have friends like that. It's like, oh, let's hang out with that dude after 2 hours, you're like, now I know I don't hang out with them. We call them KFC friends.
That's funny,
So how did you get, and again, I know we can, you know, we research this, but I think, like myself, I didn't know. Like, how did the whole That Metal Show come together? How did you hook up with Don Jameson and Eddie Trunk? Like, how did that whole thing materialize?
I met Eddie in a gay bar. Why wouldn't Eddie use the phone, you know?
You just had a friend come out of the closet. So anyway.
No, I mean,
I'm not gonna bash
on Eddie. No, Eddie was on the radio in New York on Q104 Friday nights. He played a heavy metal show. So me and Don are driving home from comedy gigs every Friday and Saturday night, and we're listening to Eddie.
On the comedy road at that point.
On the road, we do front gigs. So we're driving home. We're listening to Eddie playing Raven and Sax. And we're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Exactly.
Holy shit, he likes the same shit that we do. Yeah. And then a month later, we meet him at a concert, and we say, hey man, we're big fans of yours, and we're comedians. He goes, oh man, I love having comedians come on my show. If you guys were off on a Friday night, come up to my radio show, hang, we'll talk metal, we'll talk music, fuck around. And then, you know, cut to 6 months later, he goes, I already work at VH1. I'm going to pitch a show, a heavy metal talk show, like the Tonight Show.
He was already at VH1 at that point?
Yeah, he was doing some other interview show.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, I already got an in. I'm going to basically pitch a Tonight Show for AC/DC fans, and I want you guys as co-hosts. Let's see what happens. And then we did a show, and it took off from
there.
And
then that was 7 year run? 8 year run? How many years?
I don't know, 2008 to 2015, 7 years, 130 episodes.
And the ratings were awesome, right? I mean,
I think so, yeah. I mean, they don't tell the talent because they don't want you to know if you got good ratings, because then you're going to want more money.
The producer
did it one time because the ratings for Lars, it's like season 5, the first episode or whatever, they go, went through the roof, and then he got scolded by the VH1. Don't ever tell a talent what the ratings are, because they're going to want more money. We didn't care. As long as it was on the air and they kept showing the show over and over again, it gave us great exposure. You know what I mean?
And it's too bad you didn't
So through that, though,
they wouldn't give you a fucking dime.
By the way, was that story true you told last night about the producer?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. So basically,
what was that the show you were talking about?
Yeah, that was the show. Yeah.
So you get the credit for that then, basically.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, well done, man.
About a week ago.
What am I going to do? I got to put a good performance in.
I was going to say.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I got to fucking get up and I was looking around for a Cialis.
Yeah, right. I was listening to the Eddie show on Volume, and he was telling the story of the whole metal show, what happened with it. VH1 got out of that. I got out of that business. They basically shut down VH1 Classic. You know, rebranded and all that. And when the show
It wasn't anything to do with ratings or anything like that. The show was more popular than ever during the last season. But Viacom, the company that owns Comedy Central, you know, VH1, MTV, Nickelodeon, they were losing a ton of money. Their revenue was down like 40%. So somebody came in because all the kids, Nickelodeon was their cash cow. Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, Jon Stewart leaves. And then what's his face? Colbert leaves Comedy Central and they can't replace them. They replace them with shit. And then Nickelodeon, all the kids are watching on Netflix or on their tablets. So they're not watching Nickelodeon. So the whole company shits the bed. MTV, nobody watches anymore. So someone comes in, we got to make some major cuts here because our revenue is down. So let's get rid of VH1 Classic. Let's get rid of this. Let's get rid of that. So our show was part of VH1 Classic. So it had nothing to do with that. It shows when it's course.
Yeah.
It was just a company corporate move. Come in. We got to fucking, you know, reevaluate the company and move shit around or whatever. So now MTV Classic is just old shit that they've had in the vaults that doesn't cost them a dime.
Yeah, and they just
instead of paying our salaries to produce the show, they're like, we need to cut that.
Is the metal show? Is it where do we find it? Is it just on YouTube?
It's nowhere.
No, I think they pulled.
They still have it in the vaults. Hey. That's it. They don't show it anywhere. It's not up on iTunes. I think there's one season up, maybe on iTunes. Possibly they could watch, but no, you'd think that they could get it on Netflix or something, but Viacom's always done that with their programming. They just fucking just keep it and they don't do anything with it. It's like, at least try to put it out there, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you guys talked about doing it in other formats, like podcasts, SiriusXM Radio, or any, or is it it's obviously a made-for-TV show.
It's a TV show. I mean, if all three of us do a podcast and we have, you know, Doug McKagan on, it's like, how many people, you know, it's a TV show, but... You know, whatever. I mean, look, when you get a TV show, it's almost like a coach in football. When you get hired, you know you're going to get fired at some point.
Just enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride. You know, you can win a Super Bowl year three and year five, you're fired.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is. So you just enjoy. I've been on other shows that have gotten canceled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, just another season? Fucking A. We're nice. Yeah. They took us back again. Yeah. All right. Well, I know the shit's going to end at some point. So I don't get mad or fucking angry. I just ride it out for as long as possible. Yeah. It's like fucking a hot chick that you're not supposed to fuck.
Yeah.
And you're like, is she still fucking me?
Yeah.
Holy shit. For it. All right. She still wants to fuck me?
You know the dream's going to
end. Yeah, my God. Eventually, some fucking rich guy's going to take her out on a yacht. But until then, she's going to drive around in my Honda Accord.
Axl Rose shows up or something, you know.
Yeah.
We had that joke when the soccer team's like, you know, you're never going to get the girls that the players are dating. They get the scraps sometimes.
Right.
I got a question. Jim Brewer did the Metallica opening.
Yeah.
Tell us about your time, because you did it before him with the Slayer Anthrax.
Yeah, Megadeth, yeah.
How was your... Did you see that live, what Jim did?
I didn't see Jim. I didn't see Metallica on this leg of the tour.
Did you talk to Jim about what he was doing? Did you get the gist of what?
I know. I don't know. I heard rumors. I don't know. He was running around. He was interviewing him backstage.
It really wasn't that bad. I saw the show a few times.
Right, yeah. No, Jim's amazing, man. He's an amazing talent.
He
but
was
I know
just he, doing comedy, though? Like
He wasn't doing comedy. He was emceeing. Instead of an opening band, he came out. He talked to the crowd. They did some interaction. He had video crews. They would go find... like the oldest person there. Like it was actually at the Buffalo show, the lady in front of me was 78 with her like 61 year old son. They were there. So the video crew came up, they interviewed him. They went up to the rafters each corner and
so
got
just bounced around the venue talking to people.
Four couples down on stage and they did a Metallica trivia.
Oh, cool.
And then the winners got to go into the dressing room before the show, and there was interaction with Lars, and you know, it wasn't that bad. It was
right.
You know,
I
did like 3 5-minute sets in between each band.
Between the bands.
Yeah, between the bands. Jägermeister hired me for the tour, so I had to do some Jägermeister announcements, promote Jägermeister, and then just do a quick 5-minute set right before the band went on and introduce the band they were on. So it wasn't that bad, and I just knew, you know, with the announcements, that took up 2 minutes, and then I just fucking, you know.
Did you do some jokes in there?
Yeah, doing some quick jokes.
Did you throw some metal ones in?
I would just say, does anyone like hip-hop? And they would boo for 30 seconds. So I'm like, cool, I just killed 30 seconds there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Shit like that. So, you know, I knew how to play, and then just quick sex or drinking jokes and got in, got out as quick as possible.
Slayer, because bands can't even open for Slayer.
Yeah, so, you know, and just like, hey, man, I'm just making announcements that are coming up in 5 minutes. You want to go get a beer, go get a piss. I got 5 minutes up here and I'm bringing them on.
That's cool.
So I would just tell them, I go, look, if you don't like, I'm not taking any time away from the band. I just want to let you guys know this. It's 8:55. Slayer's coming on right at 9. So you got fucking 5 minutes. I'm just going to fuck around for a few minutes and bring them on. So I wanted to let them know that I wasn't, because I was always that drunk guy in the crowd when the local DJ's up there babbling. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Shut up. Get them on.
Bring the band on.
Right, right.
Ozzy's going to play one less song because you're promoting your radio station that doesn't even play Ozzy.
Like, except back in the day, I don't know if they did it down there, the DJ would come up and announce upcoming shows that weren't announced yet, which like back in the early mid 80s.
Oh, really?
Was cool. It's
that was pre-internet probably too.
Well, yeah. It's like Dave Kane, the local guy, like, hey, this is Dave Kane from WCMF. We're proud to announce blah 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 Triumph at the War Memorial. It would be the first announcement.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
And everyone would go crazy. And that's it. That's back in the day. Every Saturday night, we'd go to the War Memorial for a show. It's like going to the movies.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you going to Aerosmith Saturday?
Yeah.
It's general admission. Penfield section sat in 6. Tickets were $10. Yeah. That's what's missing now. Now your son's 8.
Yeah.
What's he listening to? What's he?
Slipknot. He's on a big Nirvana kick now.
Okay, that's cool because
he's kind of getting into metal then a little
bit. Oh, he's been in the metal since he was 5. At 5, I took him to Zakk Wylde was his first show. He's been to 17 concerts.
Wow. That's how my kids are. My boys are 26, 22, and 20 now. 10, 12 years ago, they were doing Guitar Player.
Yeah.
And Guitar Hero. So I took them to see Metallica. They say Rush. They saw Maiden. You know, fuck, my Tommy was 8, and Bruce Dickinson's up there with the Trooper. He's like, Dad, there's Bruce.
I know.
I mean, now they listen to other shit, and your boy will probably find his way, too, but...
No, well, hopefully not.
I mean, yeah, they're going around.
I mean, that is something that we talk about a lot, too, like, you know, as these bands are classic heroes are aging out, you know, where's the next generation of young metal bands and or even fans? I saw Anita Strauss here 2 weeks ago, and she's talking how she's influencing all these female guitar players, younger generation. But when you go to the show, it's still old dudes, you know, metalheads in their 50s, you know. Yeah. And you know, you go to even pre-shows now or Maiden, like, it, you know. So the fan base is aging out. So I guess the question is, do you think there's like a second cycle of a next generation of?
There's got to be some. There's going to have to be some band, whether it be like a Greta Van Fleet or something, or some young band where young kids are going to start going.
Right.
Where metal's going to be back in style. It always comes back around again. At some point, it will. You know what I mean? It's going to come back where young kids are. There's going to be one band that does it. It was the same thing with comedy. Dane Cook pretty much brought comedy to another level, and Dane was huge, and he was selling out arenas.
Mm-hmm.
My nephew was like 15, him and his friends. He never gave a fuck that I did comedy. He never asked about, you do stand-up comedy, want to come see one of your shows, I want to hear your material. And then one day he comes up, he goes, you know Dane Cook? I go, yeah, I know Dane. He goes, oh man, me and my friends love him, man. We're going to go see him. We love all his stuff. And so Dane introduced that, and then all his friends would come see me. Because Dane introduced him to comedy, and they still come to see me, you know, 12 years later. Right, so you need that band to just introduce the young, and then they'll come around, and then there'll be other bands.
Because that's the thing. You could bring your son. My daughters could give two craps about heavy metal. Like they actually don't even like it at all. But the point is, at some point, they got to find, like, if that's my dad's band, that's the old school Maiden, that's
right.
They need to find that young band that's like, hey, this is our metal. Like, this is our generation metal, you know?
Red Van Fleet selling out 6,000 seats.
They are.
Look,
but they're not metal. I mean, they're just, most people say they're Zeppelin ripoff.
Right, band. Okay, but I mean, then what if Zeppelin ripped off all their shit? The first two records were completely stolen. So,
like Dudes from the Swamp.
Right, everything was completely stolen. Even, you know, Stairway to Heaven, they're still in fucking court over.
Did you hear that?
That's shit like that.
That's eerie.
Yeah, I know, and they opened for them and stuff, too.
Yeah, I read that story.
So, you know, but yeah, I know, look, we're all, you know, as soon as you hear something, oh, man, that was done, you know, when Manson came out, that was Alice Cooper. He's always Alice Cooper, you know what I mean? It's like, whatever. I mean, they're going to be influenced by something at some point. I don't care if Greta Van Fleet sounds like Zeppelin and you're an old school guy, you go, that's a Zeppelin ripoff. As long as they can... You know, that's great that a 22-year-old kids are selling 6,000 tickets.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, and no matter what you think, if everyone's like, where's the next metal band to come from? If they're the ones that are going to do it, and then there's going to be three other bands behind them, and then all young kids go, I love Greta Van Fleet. Oh, look at this band, the Dirty Honey. Yeah. There's another
Dirty Honey does rock.
Yeah, yeah. So, I like Dirty Honey now because they're, you know, similar to Greta Van Fleet and are younger. They're young kids. So, if that's what does it, then that's great.
Yeah, I agree.
No, that's valid. That's good. I had a question back to that metal show. So, like, Vernomatic and I, like, we're just metal geeks at the core. And so when we do this, it's cool because we get to meet more of our, you know, heroes and guys that we grew up listening to. With that metal show, dude, you got to see all of them, right? I mean, guitarists, singers, bands, which ones stick out? Like, just interviews you did or guys that you were like, man, this is so awesome.
Well, Lemmy always coming on was great. Lemmy was on like
three. Who was cool and who was a dick?
No one was a dick. People always ask that question. They always want to know cool, who was a dick.
Yeah.
I don't know why. People always ask that. Well, is there anyone a dick?
Maybe once you're not fanboy and you're more on the bad side.
No, but it's weird though, and everyone always like, who's a dick? Everybody wants to know that. Nobody wants to know. No, look, Eddie knew all these guys basically. Right, he was in the radio business for 30 years or whatever at that point.
He pretty much almost got everybody at pretty much.
Yeah, so no one was a dick because Eddie's already had a relationship with them and they knew that, you know, if Dokken was coming out with a new record, he's not going on a Tonight Show to promote it, but it'll come on our show.
Right.
And that will be like the Tonight Show for him. So no one, everyone knew, and there's, you know, they were all, we didn't catch them in their 20s when they could have been dicks, you know. You know, in their 40s and 50s, they know it's a business, and we got to sell some shit, and we, you know, and this show is big for metalheads.
Yeah,
they're not gonna be dicks. So I didn't. There was not one person that was a dick.
Did you guys have any influence who you brought on? Well, you did, but
yeah, I mean, we can definitely make suggestions. Like, we need to get this one on. They weren't sold on it because they didn't know anything about metal, the people at the channel. So we'd have to basically tell them, no, you need this guy on, this guy. They always like, no, we need a face like, you know, Bret Michaels. We need him on every week because people know him from Rock of Love. And if they change the channel, they go, oh, there's that guy from the dating show. I'm like, no. Put Tony Iommi there. I think when it was it Bill Ward that we had on or somebody from Sabbath. He was old and he just sat there. I go, believe me. I go, it doesn't matter. People want to hear fucking Bill Ward was going to say. No one at home's going, God, the guy's not moving around.
No,
he's got to jump up in the air and do a karate kick.
When you had Uli Roth on there.
I mean, right.
Come on. That's great.
I know. I'm like, no, then believe me. Why me and Don cut down the comedy a lot. Like, they want us to be more like comedians on that. I go, look, man, if I'm at home, I don't want these fucking guys cracking, you know, fucking taking too much time up doing like these comedy bits when you got Steve Harris there. I want to hear what Steve Harris has to say.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm like, no, we're going to focus more on that. So a lot of crowd didn't even know we're comics. I go, no, we are, but I just know what you guys like. I wouldn't, if I was sitting home and some, like a brewer's on there for 7 minutes doing some comedy with him, like, come on, man. I want to fucking hear Angus.
You know what I mean?
So I just knew coming. I go, no, we're going to cut that shit back.
Right. And that's why people watch the show, right? And
yeah.
They wanted to hear what these guys had to say. And then the trivia stuff you guys did and, you know, all that was.
Right. We had time to fuck around.
How much of that was helped?
Eddie had no idea what questions were coming. And the producer would show me and Don the questions before the show because a lot of them were from the audience coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
They come in and he goes, what do you think of these? I go, yeah, you can't, you know, who was the session player that played on the third LA Guns record on bass, but he wasn't but they didn't put him on the album. I go, no, there's no way. Take that one out. I go, all right, this is good. This is easy. You'll probably get this one. But yeah, you got to,
because
these other ones are really hard. But yeah, these are good. And that's basically how it went.
I would love to take on Eddie in like a name the tune segment where you start cranking a tune and you can guess the band and the album and all that. But there's no way I could compete with him on the Stump the Trump stuff. Because I'm like, who the hell knows the third session player on the LA Guns album?
Yeah.
Well, he knows that shit. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know why he knows that shit?
Why? Because he was in Megaforce Records back in the day.
No, back in the day when we bought the albums. You probably did it yourself.
Right. All
the
stuff
there and you're reading the back of the album. That's how we knew who George Marino was. You're like, how else would you know who the fuck mastered Number of the
that's
Beast?
True. I guess that's
because you read the small print.
Yeah.
Then after you read in that, because that's what's lost in today.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, what's good about today is like iTunes. I subscribe to Apple Music, $10 a month. So anything that comes out, I can listen to it. If it's a band that I like or a band that I want to support, like I bought Duff's new record, I'll buy the record for $10. I go to Starbucks. I spend $5 on a fucking coffee. So I'll buy the record even though I don't have to, just to support. So I'll always buy it, if it comes out, you know, new Clutch record or whatever, I'll buy. But then, you know, my son, because I'm getting him in the metal, if he wants to hear the Nirvana, you know, Lithium, I put it on and the lyrics are right under the song. So he knows all the lyrics to the songs that we never, you know, they were on the inside of the album cover, but if you didn't read that fucking fine print, you didn't know the lyrics. He knows all the lyrics right away because they put them on every song.
Or if they didn't have them.
If they didn't have them, you had to try to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
But now he knows them. He's just reading them as the song's going. It's great for him.
Yeah.
Because I never, like, unless the album had the lyrics, I'm like, I don't know, I'll figure it out, but I didn't really care too much.
Oh, yeah, it took me 30 years to find out he was saying push-ups too, and ice cream.
But to your point, right. As much as, the streaming stuff's cool and Spotify, and you can get any song, and there's something about just owning the freaking CD or owning the vinyl, crank it into your car. Almost new cars don't even make the freaking CD players anymore. And anyway, you get to read the liner notes, you get to see who produced it, who mixed it, and it's hard to get.
I stopped buying physical products about 2 years ago. Stopped because I was like, I can't find them. It's almost impossible. Then I got to order. I'd like to buy it, get it the first day. So I just I'll download it. But to me, like if I'm in a car and I just want to hear, Saxon Eagle Has Landed, I'm like, oh, fucking perfect. I put it right in my phone, and then in 2 seconds, it's on.
True. Was there any band that you guys didn't get in there, or a musician that you were frustrated that you always wanted to get on that metal show?
I don't think so. I think they got everybody.
And you guys even had those guitars come in and, like, do this.
Yeah, James Hetfield said, dude, I love what you guys are doing, man. It's great, but I just don't want to do – I don't want to do the show. He goes, let Lars – or even Kirk do it and stuff like that. He goes, I love watching and you guys supporting, you guys
just
bringing these, keeping metal alive.
Well,
thanks.
Why do you think? Over?
I don't know. He just said, I didn't feel like, he goes, I don't want to do it. So I was fine. He wasn't being a dick about it. He goes, I love what you guys are doing. He goes, but it's more Lars to go on there and fuck around and talk about like Deep Purple and Kirk to geek out with Michael Schenker and stuff. So
yeah, Kirk,
which was fine.
That was great.
Yeah.
Who's who are you listening, like, who are you digging now? I mean, just like.
I like that band Dirty Honey.
I never heard of them.
They just only got an EP out, like 5 songs.
Yeah.
A little Aerosmith, Guns N' Roses in there.
Exactly.
A little Zeppelin, but they're young. I saw them at a festival about a month ago. I thought they were great, great energy on stage.
What did you think of Firepower, the Priest album?
I loved it. I thought it was
great. Isn't
it great?
Yeah. You think that's like top 5 automatic almost.
Yeah,
like,
that's like the Priest album. That's fantastic. Yeah,
well, that's definitely Richie Faulkner's influence a lot.
Right, but it was great. I loved it. Yeah.
Did you hear Nita Strauss's yet?
I haven't heard Nita's. No,
it's definitely good.
Yeah,
it's all instrumental, but
right. Nita's great, man. She's a rock star, man.
She's one I think that could really turn on some younger fans for sure.
What, how did Metal Midgets come about? How did you pitch that to Sirius?
I've been I just said, look, man, I want to do a heavy metal, radio show because Jim Norton was doing. I'm friends with Jim Norton.
Yeah, Friday nights.
Yeah, and he was doing his metal show on there, and I have the same manager, and he's like, I could try to get you on Ozzy's Boneyard. I go, I'd love that, man. That'd be fucking great.
Yeah.
And then we pitch him like a 2-hour show, I pick my own music, and then, and they go, yeah, let's do it, man. They're going to pay you really shitty, but if you want to plug any of your stuff, you're allowed to do your plugs. Like, okay, I'll take it. Because I'm thinking, Sirius is all over the place, so I can plug my gigs in Phoenix, Arizona, or New York City.
And that's what you do.
And that's what I do. And I go, okay, this is the offer, but you can plug whatever you want. I'm like, I'm in.
So, where do you do it?
I've been doing it like 8 years now. I do it on the road. I got a portable, like a Zoom recorder, and I could just do it. And I just make out the playlist, and I just set it in there, put the voiceovers in a Dropbox, and do it like that. Because they said, look, I said, look, I'm going to be on the road. They go, that's fine. Do it from your hotel room. Do it from backstage at a concert. We don't care.
Yeah.
We don't actually want you in the studio. And it's not a live show anyway.
Yeah.
So if I'm backstage at a concert, I can interview somebody real quick, No, because I just said, I'm not going to play the hits. Everyone's heard you shook me all night long.
Right,
welcome to the jungle.
Right,
yeah, so exactly. I'm going to play deeper shit. Everybody has Back in Black, so I can play Shake a Leg on there. You know what I mean? Instead of Hell's Bells. No, that's what I always say. I'm like, I'm just fucking just a dude that just tells dirty jokes. I get paid for it, man. And I'm a metalhead or whatever. It's just like my whole life growing up was listening to metal, like when I was a kid, and making prank phone calls. And then I get a gig on Comedy Central that launches my career making prank calls. And then I was always a metalhead. And then I get that metal show. It's been great. So I'm just fucking, a dude that lives in the suburbs and still goes tailgates at all the concerts and shit like that. It's fucking great.
What about the grind of the road? Is getting older? Is it?
No, I still like it, man. I get paid to go tell jokes. So, it's a bitch, getting from city to city sometimes, but whatever. A comic's different than a band where you're in a different city every night.
Yeah,
I'm in Rochester 3 nights in a row, stay in the same hotel and go to the same club.
And then go home.
So it's a lot easier than doing next gig is 8 hours away. I get there 2 hours before showtime, and shit like that. So bands definitely got it tougher.
When will you fly out tonight? Or tomorrow? What's your
Tomorrow afternoon or in the morning? I don't know. I think around noon or something like that. Yeah, just fly out.
Fly up, go home, and
I usually fly out the first flight out early because those are usually ones that aren't delayed. you get later in the afternoon, all of a sudden there's a thunderstorm somewhere, right, and then fucking, right, you know, right, you're 4 hours delayed.
That's the stuff, because I'm sitting there watching a show and I'm thinking, because you're sharing your life. You're sharing, you know, yeah, you're sharing, you know, single father, you know, with yeah, your son. I start visualizing. I'm like, all right, this dude flies in on Thursday, does the three nights, flies back home. I wonder what the rest of the week's like. Starts planning the next tour. Where? How do you route your tour?
No, I just wherever I'm going to play. Like next week, I'm in New York City, so it's home gigs, you know. And then the week after, I go to Dallas for 3 days, and I do shows there. So
it's always that Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
or Friday, Saturday, or Wednesday through Saturday, or something. It all depends the club, but usually 3 or 4 days. You're in the same club. So it's, yeah. Well, last week, me and Jameson did some gigs, one in Atlanta and the next night in Nashville. So we opened for some bands. So, you know, once in a while we do stuff like that. But cool. Yeah, I mean, it looks just like a regular job, you know. And I got usually off early in the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah. Those are my days off.
Cool.
You know, so, and then I got my kid then. So we just fucking hang and, you know.
It's life.
So yeah. We'll wrap with this little – we have these little fun segments that we do sometimes. So one of them is called Metal Confessions.
Right.
And we got Vivian Campbell to tell a story in Rochester, actually, when he was hanging with the Motley Crue dudes doing shots with Tommy Lee and Nikki Sixx, like, late one night. And
it was his birthday.
He said it was the most drunk he ever got, kind
of
thing.
It was Vivian's birthday. They're here on the girls'
And we just got started with this, and we haven't even told the whole time. But do you have a metal confession that comes to mind?
So what I would go – I'd go in town – this is before that metal show – is on the air. So I'd go in town. I always have to do local radio. So I knew if there was a band in town, I would talk about them in the local morning show, and maybe they'd come out to the show. They would hear, hey, man, some comedian was talking about you. That's how I try to lure them to my show. I did it with Jason McMaster in Austin, Texas. I was a big, you know, Dangerous Toys. Yeah. Then he had this band. He has a band, Broken Teeth. I love those. Okay. I don't know if you ever heard his other
project.
I
remember Dangerous Toys. But
yeah, Broken Teeth. Like, so it's sort of similar like the AC/DC, whatever. Right. So I found them one night on the internet. I'm like, holy shit. And I said, oh, this is Jason McMaster. Next time I'm in Austin, I go on the radio. Like, yeah, I love this band, Broken Teeth, Jason McMaster. And the DJ's like, yeah, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. I'm like, yeah, you got to hear that, man. It's Broken Teeth. I kept bringing it up. And then all of a sudden, Jason shows up at my show. He goes, hey, dude, man, I'm Jason, man. So I heard you were talking about me on the radio, because everybody in town's like, some dude's talking about me. So he comes. So then I go to Dallas, and I kept saying I'm a big Pantera fan and this and that. I keep fucking pounding away on the local radio.
Nice.
And then all of a sudden, this is when they were doing Damage Plan.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So they were right before the record came out. So I'm at the comedy club in Dallas, and it's a Saturday night, and the club owner goes, hey, all the guys from Pantera are here. I'm like, they are? He goes, yeah, they're sitting right in the front. There's like 12 of them. I'm like, holy shit. He's like, yeah, they're here to see you. I'm like, holy fuck, it worked.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, and then I look out there. I see all these cowboy hats. I see like 75 drinks on the table.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing shots. Yeah. You know, just fucking like, what the fuck is going
and
on?
Meanwhile, I'm sure for like a guy like you loving there's freaking Pantera, that's when you probably get nervous, right? You're like,
of course.
Oh, shit. You know,
yeah,
like,
I'm like, holy shit.
Forget the 200 people in the crowd.
And they're sitting up front. And I know Vinny and Dime like comedy, because I know that was the thing. Like, on their off days, they would go to the local comedy club. They love stand-up comedy. So I knew that about them. So they show up. It was Vinny, Dime, and the new you know, Phil obviously wasn't there.
Yeah.
And the new Damage Man, Pat, was a singer, and the bass player, forget what his name was, whatever. And then it was Rita and everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get up there and I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, hey, man, I got a guy from Pantera here, man. Give him a hand. You know, everyone in Texas loves them. They go crazy and Dime stand, they all stand up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Dime goes, here, man. And he hands me a shot, like Jaeger, right? And I take the shot. I go, hey, I go, thanks, man, but I don't drink before the show. I'll drink it afterwards. And I put it on the stool on the stage and the whole crowd starts booing me. I go, no, man, I don't drink before. And then Dime pours another one. He goes, hey, he hands me two shots. He goes, fuck that. You're doing a double now.
Oh, yeah. No.
And then I just did two shots in a row. I'm like, oh, shit.
No, bets are off.
I'm like, all right, man, if I do these two shots, I got to do my show, too. So I go, all right, fine, but you got to do them, too. And I did the two. The place went nuts.
Yeah, Dimebag's telling you to do shots, man.
Exactly. I don't turn it down. Right. And then afterwards, I had a limo outside, because those guys bought an old limo, and they had one of their friends drive them around. They'd pay them, I don't know, like $250 on a night. So whenever they would never drink and drive. They go, we'd just call him up. He's on call. He'd come out. We'd take the limo, and we'd just go out drinking. So that was the thing. They were professionals. They had Pedialyte in the limo to hydrate, you know, what I mean, from drinking so much. Yeah, I was in their rider on the bus. Pedialyte is at height. So before you go to bed, you got to drink a lot of Pedialyte.
True.
So you don't wake up hungover.
Yeah,
so And yeah, so we go in the limo. He's like, "Are you? I want to play the new record, the Damage Plan record." I'm like, "Yeah,
dude, this is
so." This is before it's even out. This is 3 months before it's out, and they're fucking cranking it in there. It sounds like a concert, and they're all fucking headbanging and singing. I'm like, "Holy!" And me and the other comic, the local comic, like, "Holy shit, this is unbelievable." We're hanging out with fucking these. And then he brings us to the strip club.
Oh, okay. Even better.
Yeah, yeah. Brings us to their strip club.
Like, I'm in now.
Like, yeah, he's like, come on, we're going to the strip club. Like, all right. And we're there till like 6 in the morning, fucking stumbling out of there. And Dimebag brought me up in the back room or whatever. We talked just metal for like an hour. You know, just talking. He's like, dude, man, when you're up on stage, man, it's all about the audience. He goes, it doesn't matter if there's 5 people there or fucking 90,000. Because they played the Moscow Peace Festival. He goes, we're going to do this new band. We don't know. We're going to play clubs. Still got to give it a... If there's 5 people, do 2 hours instead of an hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I always remember that. He goes, you got to give them a show no matter who shows up.
Yeah.
I've always been like that. Like, there's 3 people at the comedy club. Oh, man, I'll do it. You sure you want to do a show? I go, I'll do 2 hours.
Because you make 3 fans. It may not be a fan. In front of 3
people. So, yeah. And he was trying to call Zach Wilde. He goes, dude, man, I got this guy. You're going to fucking love me. He's from Jersey. Wake up, motherfucker. It's like 4 in the morning.
Do you know Zach at the time?
No, I didn't know Zach at the time. This was before that metal show, so I didn't know.
And that's when he was full blown drinking.
Oh yeah,
and then sober.
So then, about a month later, I'm back in town doing a club again for some reason, and there's a birthday party for Dimebag at his house where you're just throwing for him.
Uh-huh.
I said, all right, I got to do a show. I'll be over there after the show. So I do the show. I get there at like 10:30. It's a party for Dimebag. It's his birthday. There's like 50 people there at the house. He's already passed out at 10:30, out cold.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I'm like, all right. So I still went to the party. It was amazing. Vinny was there and everybody was great, right? And then I'm going to the airport the next morning. It's like 7:30 a.m. My phone rings. I'm like, the fuck? I'm not picking this up. And it was Dimebag. He's like, Florentine, sorry, man, I passed out. 7:30 in the morning, I'm at a titty bar. If you're in town, fucking meet me there. No, because I was getting on a plane. I was getting on a plane. 7:30, I'm at a titty bar.
So you got to get out of it. Yeah,
it's fucking great, Texas, man.
Isn't it fun, though? But then you see how those guys really push it, man, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Their lifestyle, like crazy stuff.
Yeah, it was
like,
great. It was
6 in the morning is nothing for them.
Like, nothing.
They leave and sun's coming up.
It's nice to visit, but you got to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, man, I can't. I can do this one night.
Did you ever remember that club called Bellevue Bar in Manhattan? It's now called Duff's Brooklyn.
Oh, I know Duff's, yeah.
Yeah, the metal bar. Well, that used to be in Brooklyn. It used to be in Manhattan, right on 39th and 9th. And at one point, we got all, you know, Jimmy Duff, the owner.
Yeah.
Like, we got all these bands that come out there. Like, Maiden came in there one time, Primal Fear. Like,
really?
Yeah, we're stumbling out of that place at 5, 6 in the morning. Sun's coming up. People are going to work and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't know. I don't remember that place.
Yeah,
no.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was before that became Duff's.
But, okay.
We're just about out of time, but.
Yeah. Anything you want to plug or promote or anything that we just...
My new comedy special is out. It's called I Got the House. It's all about my divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You could stream it everywhere
pretty
much.
Did you really get the house?
Huh?
You got the house?
Yeah. Professional. Please.
Well done.
You're fucking PD Prenup.
You got a show and you got a house, man.
PD Prenup.
You know. Awesome.
Yeah, so that's the running gag through the whole thing. I'm telling about all my divorce, what went down. Yeah. I'm like, look, relax. I got the house, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, you could stream at Amazon Prime or anywhere you can stream, or it's available on my website, jimflorentine.com. And the book is Everybody is Awful Except You. It's basically me making fun of social media. I break down what's really going on. I have people's actual posts in the book. Because I do a podcast every week called Comedy Metal Midgets. And people just send me in like social media stuff that would annoy me.
Right.
You know, a guy taking a picture of his hamburger. And right. You know, so I just rip it apart. So then I made a book out of the podcast. Awesome. And the podcast every Monday. And then my comedy special.
All right, cool. Beautiful. Jim, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, man. Really absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you very much, man. Thanks again to Jim Florentine, MetalMayhemROC.com. And we appreciate everything. Thanks, Jim.
All the
best.
Thank you for listening to the Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at MetalMayhemROC.com, MetalForever.com for more information on upcoming concerts, podcasts, archives, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone. Catch us next time here on WLFE DB Radio.